Hi, everyone, and welcome to another special episode where we have Lily Seiss with us. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Super, super glad you're here. And so just like very briefly, we actually had a common client and she told me about your work and I checked out your social media stuff and I was like, wow, she's saying like very similar things to what we do. So I was really excited about having you here. But for those, like for the 2% in the audience who don't know you, what's your bio? Like who's Lily Seiss?
Yeah, well, I'm a former school psychologist. So I was a school psychologist for, I guess, 14 years. And during that time, I also struggled with anxiety and panic and OCD, even before that. But during my period as a school psychologist, I really struggled with driving anxiety and health anxiety and panic attacks, and tried a bunch of different kind of traditional things, you know, things that I was taught in grad school and things that I would learn from different therapists and, you know, tips and techniques. And some worked, but nothing was deep and long lasting. And a lot of the things that I tried, which I think you might resonate with, you know, being a sleep coach, and when it comes to, you know, trouble sleeping and insomnia, it like made it worse. And it was like made anxiety and everything like such a big deal. And I would and then, you know, supplements. And actually part of it was I had read about how important sleep was at one time and then was obsessed, like, well, for mental health, I have to get, you know, and I can sometimes do really deep dives into things, you know, and health had been one of them, and reading about sleep, and I try to make my room so black and never be near blue light. And my anxiety was still there and it would be worse. And then sometimes I wouldn't sleep and I'd be terrified that if I didn't get enough sleep, I would panic and I could lose my mind. And I felt really broken because a lot of the traditional things weren't working, like grounding techniques or breathing techniques. Honestly, for me, I would like hyper-focus on them and then I would forget how to breathe effortlessly. I would forget how to fall asleep effortlessly. So I struggled for a long time. And then in 2018, I found the three principles understanding through just, you know, typing it into Google one more time, like what else is there to help with this anxiety and panic? And I came across a woman who's now a dear friend, Sari Taylor. And she had just it was like 5 or 7 day anxiety course. And she just sent you like a 30-minute video each day. And it was so simple. And I really heard how my wisdom got me through I'm going into a longer thing. So I'll try to speed up who I am. So my life changed. I realized how simpler well-being was and how I stopped kind of resisting panic attacks. I actually started like doing less and feeling better when I before had, oh my God, I had just all these night routines, morning routines, just stuff that I, and my life changed. And so I started, you know, sharing a bit about that as a school psychologist, but I always had wanted to work with adults, especially I really wanted to share with adults who, like me, had found some of the more traditional stuff out there to like not work. Because for years I felt really broken. I felt kind of like I had this secret, like, what's real? What's wrong with me? Like, I can't believe it's not working, you know, and I kept going to more meditation certifications and more cognitive, you know, just more and more. And I was like, really felt like something was really wrong with me. So I really wanted to spread the message for other people that might have felt like that. And I thought it needed to be in person because I'd always worked in person. And then COVID came and a lot of things moved to being virtual. And I was like, wow, I could run a virtual group for people with anxiety, just dealing with anxiety and panic that felt like they tried traditional things that wasn't working. So, you know, in August of 2020, that's when I kind of prepared for this to run a course. And then I transitioned to be an anxiety coach. And at first I just kept working as a school psychologist. But then eventually I just transitioned to being a full-time anxiety coach, and I became a registered three principles practitioner because being a school psychologist, I loved having like the grounding in some sort of, I don't know, certification. And I'd been debating, should I go back and get my PhD? And then I'm like, I want it in the principles just because I loved this conversation, this understanding. So that's the community that I'm in because they've done a wonderful job in terms of supervision. And I've had some amazing mentors even outside of the global community, but still in the three principles. So today I'm a human at peace with living life and working as an anxiety coach. And because I share a lot on social media, as I'm sure you probably, I get to work with people all over the world. So it's so exciting to me. It never loses it that I can talk to somebody, you know, in India, that we have such a similar experience. And I can talk to somebody in Canada and somebody in Australia. And they're like, you know, they'll see my videos and they feel like we're twins, you know? And so it's been really exciting.
Amazing. That's a, you know, wonderful intro. And, you know, I actually, you know, this became kind of like a, you know, a summary, if you will. And I want to actually go deeper into some of these aspects. But first, I want to say, like, you know, so glad you found this. And like, you not only did you find peace for yourself, now you're teaching other people. It's amazing. But let's go back to, like, for you, like, you were, like, your anxiety journey, your anxiety story. Like, was that, like, looking back, was there anything that, like, triggered it? Or where did it come from, if you will? What do you think?
I was an anxious child. I think some of it is just my tendency. But I think some of it was a misunderstanding. You know, just different people are sensitive to different things. You know, I was very sensitive to movies. And so in movies, I would see that parents would die in a car crash. Parents died in a plane crash. And my parents are very wonderful and free-spirited. And they're in their 70s now, and they're off to London in a few days, and they live, you know, in three different parts of the world. And they love the arts and plays and, you know, music and doing stuff. And it scared me so much, because when I would hear on the news that, you know, people were dying, I really thought, like, if something was possible, it was probable. So, but I didn't, to when I say misunderstanding, I think if there had been maybe, and it's nobody's fault, you know, but because I received information, I think, differently. If I thought something, it was true. And if I felt it strongly, that must be true. So when my parents would go out at night and I would have the thought, what if they die in a car crash? My heart would ache, I would cry. And I kind of felt like I maybe was knowing, like this was a premonition. Now I know that we have thoughts and we have feelings about them. Just because we feel something strongly doesn't mean it's true. And so when I was little, there were some points that then I naturally did a behavior that was soothing. Like I'd smell my mom's sweaters or pray and they would return alive. So I think for me, it was really scary, this unknown, this unpredictable, the fact that I couldn't control if my parents died, you know, or if there was an earthquake or if there was a fire. You know, I was so afraid of people breaking into the house, you know, and also there was a TV show when I was little called Punky Brewster, and the Punky's mom, I don't know if her dad is in the picture, abandoned her. And honestly, until I was 11, almost every day, I was like, today's going to be the day. And I remember being 11 in sixth grade. And no, I knew, pardon me, we moved to a different part of Los Angeles so I could go to this school. And so, but my mom was a few minutes late picking me up. And I was like, today's the day. And I remember having this conversation in my head, and my brain said, but why would they wait until you're 11? Like, you know, that rational part, like 11 is kind of old. And I honestly, the response was like, there just wasn't a good time, you know, and that seemed so real. You know, and then the same thing with health, you know, I loved like ER and, you know, I was just really impacted by people then getting brain cancer, and it seemed so much larger, you know, robberies, abandonment, plane crashes, car crashes, like brain tumors, you know, they're there, but it was like, oh my gosh, you know, and so much of my life. And I would plan, we had a lovely live-in housekeeper, but she was a bit older. So my parents would go out and I'm like, they're going to die. And then I'd be like, Mercetta, she's also going to die. And I would like plan, like there was so much, I really believed my thinking and my feelings about that. And then that kind of morphed also. And I enjoyed my life as well. But as a teenager, I really started like drinking and doing drugs and having an eating disorder. I think some of that was to like self-soothe and something I felt like I could control. And I could go into my adult stuff, but it's, it just kind of ramped up from there and there was various things, but, you know, I guess to answer that question, I think it was, I have a fast imaginative mind and a misunderstanding about thoughts and feelings and imagination. So I think that's all it was. There wasn't really anything wrong with me. It was just like a innocent overreaction and misunderstanding.
Wow. You know, when I hear you share this story, like there's so many elements that are familiar from, you know, the insomnia journey and community and everything else. So to me, it sounds like almost like from an early age, there was this, you know, we have these like perceived threats, perceived fears, and then we naturally want to escape them and we find things that can temporarily make us feel better, which feels better in the moment. But ultimately, we teach ourselves that we should try to escape kind of these inner threats, and that can become kind of a habit that kind of escalates and continues to grow. Something like that is what I'm hearing. But does that resonate with your teaching and your understanding?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. Yeah. Well, I think it's being so scared about something being uncomfortable or feeling, wanting to escape it, wanting to control it, you know, not realizing that our thoughts flow, you know, our experience flows.
Very well. And did you, like, now I have to ask you, like, your decision to become a school psychologist, was that partly because kind of you wanted to help other kids that have had like similar experiences in their childhood, something like that?
I know it was. You know, I really felt kind of weird and different. And like, if I could talk to a supportive adult when I would be a kid, I was like, oh. So when I moved to that new school, we had a counselor, and her name was Leslie, and she had a couch, and I was like, oh my gosh, I loved going to Leslie's room. You know, this, but also I loved kids. I only wanted to be a mom, and I loved kids, and I knew I would probably be a working mom. And I go to Massachusetts with my family, where my mom's family's from, every summer. And it's such a special part. And I was like, I want a job where I can still have the summers off. But in terms of psychology, yes, I think it was definitely from my childhood experiences. And Leslie was like the first counselor that I talked to. And then I had a wonderful therapist named Beverly, who I met when I was 19. And she just changed my life. I felt like I could tell her anything. And she would be like, yep, all right, and here's how we'll handle it. And I was just so inspired, I think, by those mental health professionals. And I went to be a school psychologist.
Wonderful, yeah. Now, you know, all this, like, you know, it's super nice getting to know you and getting to know your story. We kind of like, we're building up towards that moment where everything changed, you know, with you found the 3P. And you know, in light of that, maybe just one last question, one final thing here. During your sort of like your adult life as a school psychologist, but at, you know, at the same time dealing with all this anxiety, like how were you functioning? Did you still were able to kind of show up at work and do your work, or like how impacted were you by the struggle?
There were days, you know, after I was okay, you know, and when I had a panic attack, that's when it really, became harder. I had a panic attack driving to work, and I was in Los Angeles. We have like a lot of freeways. So I was on the freeway. And at this time I was at, when you start out as a school psychologist, sometimes you're not just at one school, you're at a few schools. So this time I was actually at two different districts at like four different schools. And that's not to say that's what was going on, but I did have a lot going on. And also I was trying a medication that honestly, it had an adverse reaction, and I had intrusive thoughts and then a panic attack driving. And I experienced derealization and depersonalization. I didn't know until after I kind of got over that experience, I mean, 7 years later, that that's what it was, but it felt like a kind of break from reality, like I was losing my mind. So I pulled over and, But after that, for 7 years, I struggled with driving anxiety. So just getting to work was very hard. Often when I'd get to work, I think I'd kind of most of the time turn off my anxious brain. I'm just generally very, I think, not to brag or anything, like I'm skilled at mental health. I love counseling. You know, I love all of that. So, and even assessments and, you know, a lot of part of it. And I always had great colleagues. When I'd get to work, I was great. But oftentimes it was the getting to work that was hard. And also driving there and back and then, you know, picking up my kids and doing a lot, like it was a lot, compounded, you know? So, and I had a lot of thinking, as I think probably people that struggle with insomnia, just like obsessing about the drive to work and the drive home. And what if this happened? And I was so afraid to like do too much. And I also think working, and a lot of times there were crises, you know, suicide assessments, child abuse reports, you know, big assessments. And I felt fragile a lot of time during that, you know, and then being a mom. And, you know, and there was right before I found the three principles, I was actually like looking into collecting disability because my driving anxiety, like it was so hard. And at various times, like I had one day, I remember walking into work and two of colleagues who I was so close with, like they, I knew they were talking about me. And I was like, what? They're like, we're so worried. We don't know how you're, we don't want you to stop working and coming here, but you're driving. And so I would drive to one of their houses and then I would park and she would drive me the rest of the way. And at one point I'd like even ride my bike. And yeah, it was, you know, but I did love my work and it was so, I was at a small district and they were so supportive of, they didn't know that much that was going on with that, but I also could become certified to teach meditation and mindfulness and yoga. And I would, they would, you know, that I was just really into as well. But it was the driving part of it because, you know, my work would often be like 45 minutes away or an hour away driving and there would be freeways. And sometimes I would, as I said, I would like take, if I had a period where I could ride my bike before I had my second child. And then another time I would take the windiest roads, like the, you know, just super residential, but so it just took a long time. And I had so much thinking about driving and panic and being afraid to get to a place where what if I couldn't drive home? And sometimes I would often be almost at work and then a panic attack would come. And I'd have to leave my car and have my husband at the time get me and my parents bring me back. And I just felt such shame, especially that I was struggling with this as a school psychologist. And it felt,
It was intense. It was intense. And then, you know, you already kind of shared with us that, you know, this led up to kind of one final time, you kind of Google, like, is there anything I can do? And you come across this like 3P practitioner and take us through that. Like, what was it like to start seeing things from a different perspective and how did things start changing?
You know, I think to start it off, I kind of just thought, oh, well, this is like anything else that I've tried. I'll give it a go. And it was, it just had such a different feeling. It was, I'm trying to even describe it. It was very welcome. You know, I had the insight that there was less for me to do. And it was welcome because my night routines and my morning routines were so long, you know, that I felt separated. And so the first insight that I had was that my wisdom got me through every panic attack and like my wisdom and common sense. And so I looked at my panic attacks in a different light because before it would be like, oh my God, that's so horrible. I never want that to happen again. What, you know, and I'd almost just all this planning for what am I going to do if it happens? So that was a really early insight. And I realized that, one, it was that I kind of felt like I had permission to have less of an extensive night routine and morning routine. And I didn't need to do all that what if and planning. Well, what if I have a panic attack? And also I made the connection that those things were also contributing to my poor mental health because it was just like ramping everything up. So it was like really exciting because I also felt like I wasn't broken. And before I felt like I'm broken, I'm really different. You know, my husband at the time could like stay up late and eating snacks and watching TV. And I was like, I'm mentally ill. Like I cannot do this. Like and then I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not. And, another huge thing was I feared that yes, the panic attack, but that it could get worse and I could go insane. And what if I had to go to a mental hospital? And I thought, could I still be a school psychologist? Like, could I be a mom? I kind of felt like I had to hold on so tight and do so much because I could just like lose my mind and there would be this point of no return. And Sari Taylor, her anxiety actually got so severe that she did go to mental hospital. And then she got to a better place and she was a psychotherapist and a coach and a mom. And there was another woman, Nicola Bird, who's also in the Three Principles community and a psychotherapist. And she also went to a mental hospital. And she got it. And I was like, so these two women who I felt like, oh, their anxiety is as bad as mine. So I had this, like, I realized there was no point of no return. Like, I was like, so it was that fear of, I was like, all right, so my anxiety ever got so bad that I went to a mental hospital, all right. Like, I dropped that fear, dropped that resistance. And I think that was really huge because probably that, like, adrenaline and tightness. And so I just slowly over these days and just Sari's attitude was like, it's just so lighthearted, so hopeful. I realized I didn't have to take my thinking so seriously. And the other thing that it was, there was less for me to do was that like my thoughts flow because before I was doing like thought work and looking at the cognitive distortions and like doing tapping and like shaking it out. And like, you know, I was doing so much. And in this conversation, it was like, oh, thoughts flow all on their own. So if I had a thought that I didn't want, accompanied with a yucky feeling, that thought will come and that will go. Less for me to do. So it was, and I think it was welcome. And I saw that by me doing less, I'd also start feeling better. And it was really, it was life-changing because I had been doing you know, you tell me I'm going to follow the perfect diet. I'm going to journal and listen to these hour long meditations for, you know, the whole 90 days. I will do it. And it was like, oh my God, there's less for me to do.
And in timeline, like when was this? When was this?
2018, like April, May, 2018, I found Sari and the Three Principles.
Wow. And now, you took this, so this was really just a 5-day course. And what happened after that? You know, things were getting lighter and easier, but did you seek out more help from the 3P community? What happened next?
Yeah, well, then I listened to a lot of, Nicola Bird had a podcast. She didn't have a book then. But so I listened to a lot of Sari and Nicola Bird and then other people in the Three Principles community. And then I also, got the Spark curriculum, which is an evidence-based curriculum based on the three principles for the school. So I kind of got interested in that way, bringing it into the school. But honestly, I did sometimes doubt that it was that simple. You know, I think at one point I was like, I had read a book and by this man, and he had, before I found the three principles, I think, and he had talked about the Hoffman process, the Hoffman Institute, which is a very intense retreat. It's like 7 days and you go through your negative love patterns from like birth to seven. And I was like, I need this. And so I'd been saving up for the Hoffman process. So I was already like, well, I'm going to go to the Hoffman process. And it was great. I love meeting people. And it was, there was therapeutic. It was helpful in some ways, but I came back and there was still like more work for you to do. And I realized I don't need any of that work, but I think that some of the insights that I had at the Hoffman process and the connections that I made, I love all of that, but it wasn't what I needed for, like, didn't have anything to do with anxiety. And I, but there were definitely, I think I was like in with the three principles, but then still kind of curious about, maybe this is too simple. And then I realized, no, it is this simple. And then I eventually just kind of stopped searching for anything else because it just, I realized, wow, like just the impact of the simplicity. And then especially when I, and then I didn't do much more. I mean, I read books, a lot of books from people that I would hear on podcasts. And then though, when I decided to share as a coach, as I said, I think there's some coaches can get a bad rap, you know, like, oh, they're just, I don't know, you know, like don't ever see a coach. Just, you have to see like a psychiatrist or a therapist. And so I had some of that insecurity. And especially when I had people coming to work with me that had OCD, because I was like, oh my God, you need to do ERP and who am I? And so I did, I actually reached out and was interviewing for some PhD programs. And then I realized I want a PhD in the principles. So I did almost a year-long mentorship with Dr. Bill Pettit, who's a retired psychiatrist, and we worked one-on-one doing a certification. And I as a school psychologist, I love like case conferencing. And I felt like starting out in a way as a new coach, I wanted an amazing mentor to case conference about. And then, so having Dr. Pettit as my teacher, and then I joined the Three Principles Global Community, and that's when they do, you know, you can become a registered practitioner and you go to weekly supervision in groups and with amazing, amazing kind of elders in the Three Principles community. And so I've took a bunch of different, a lot of courses from Dr. Pettit and other people in the Three Principles community. And then I did another virtual mentorship with George and Linda Pransky, and I get to role play with them. And so through actually my desire to be a good coach, my understanding has deepened. Even though I felt like, oh, I didn't have disordered anxiety at the start of being a coach, it has been such a blessing in disguise because my well-being has gotten so much deeper in my understanding. Yeah.
From the decision to become a coach and like teach others, it really helped you as well in a way, right?
Definitely. Yeah. Get my grounding and, yes, it also just life showing up and having little wobbles of my own helps like continually deepen my understanding.
Yeah. Amazing. You know, I'm just curious, actually, because now yeah, I've kind of asked you to share a lot of your story. You told me a lot of things, and I'm like, what do you know about me? Do you know anything about me?
No, I don't know your story. You know, I think some of the recent YouTube videos that I've seen, I think there were, because I wanted to watch a few, and I recommended them to a few of my clients. And when I went to watch, I think it was either interviewing the other person or somebody else sharing their story. Yeah, so I don't know much about you or your story, if you want to share it.
Yeah. I'll just, I mean, the community knows me very well, but I want to share with you just so for our continued discussion here. Like I'm, you know, I'm a former sleep doctor, you know? So I went through a very formal route, become an MD, became a sleep doctor, treating people with mainly like sleep apnea, you know? But also some insomnia. And what I was taught as in my 1 year sleep fellowship was basically CBTI, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. The basics of that. And that's what I was like trying to help my patients with insomnia with. But I realized what you realized yourself, that it basically led to this, like, you know, this CBTI idea is basically very control focused. It's kind of like if you stay up really late, you'll make yourself super sleepy, so you'll sleep, you know. And the whole CBT idea in itself is very much, as you know, about like, oh, this thought is a problem thought. You have to do this with it, that with it. So it wasn't really working. But I wanted to help people, so I started this app and YouTube channel, et cetera, et cetera. And it was actually, for me, the realizations came from like the constant kind of back and forth with the community. And then like these eye-opening moments when I found teachers, like you found the 3P community. I found like Sasha Stevens. She's huge in our sleep world. And eventually, I kind of left the whole CBTI idea. I went more into like our philosophy, we can call it NATO now, non-attachment to the outcome, which is very similar to like maybe ACT, or I think your principles are very similar as well. But that's kind of just a little bit about me. And you know, one thing that just briefly that was just funny that came to my mind was how you, in your story, share that sometimes you were kind of doubting, like, can it really be this simple? And that reminded me of something one of our graduates from one of our programs said to me, like after long after he graduated, she was like, oh, Daniel, you know, like sometimes, you know, we have a Slack channel and people can message themselves. So it's like us students, we were something sometimes messaging each other like, what if Daniel is wrong? What if it isn't that simple, you know? And it's just a reminder, but it is that simple, like, you know, and our first principle is actually like the principle of effortlessness, which is like peace of mind and peaceful sleep requires nothing, which I'm sure resonates with you, right?
And that's 100%, because in my, you know, community, we say the fastest way to quiet your mind is to do nothing to quiet your mind, you know, and really with anxiety and panic, there's nothing that you need to do, you know, you're welcome to do things, but actually it requires nothing, because when our mind settles, we just settle, you know, and also we always come back into balance. We just can prolong the uncomfortableness when we take our thinking seriously and we think. And then often we do things. How am I feeling better? Am I feeling better? When probably with the same with sleep, it's like, okay, am I sleeping now? Am I sleeping? When actually the less you do, the more relaxed you are. And that was, I mean, I do nothing to sleep as well. You know, I used to do so much, you know, I was so like afraid of, you know, watching the blue like TV and, or being near my phone, and I would wear blue light blocking glasses and, you know, but I was probably just like flooding my system also with adrenaline in the hour. If my husband at the time wanted to watch TV, because I'd be like, I cannot watch TV. So I'd have my glasses, but I'd be like, I don't even want to be near the TV. And I'd unplug the Wi-Fi and rub, you know, magnesium on my body and do Kundalini yoga and take the herbs and listen to stuff before bed. But it was like with such a attachment to the outcome, you know, that none of that, my anxiety about it would just override any of the nice things. Yeah. And so it was funny because I had an insight like about sleep that, yeah, sure. There were sometimes I had got 8 hours and I still had felt anxious and had a panic attack. And there were times that, you know, and I started to see that little sleep didn't equal anxiety. You know, there are some people that can feel fine. You know, so I started to kind of dismantle or have my own insights around sleep and well-being. But honestly, the sleep stuff was something still that lingered a little bit for me, even after finding the principles, driving with ease, not having panic attacks. I still held that belief that like I needed to get at least 7 or 8 hours of sleep. Like, and I remember when I met my boyfriend, now we've been together 3.5 years, you know, when you're in a new relationship and you stay up later. And so I'd kind of been in a good place, but it was still new-ish, like maybe a year or so into this kind of understanding. And we would stay up late, and there was one day, and then I was going to take my kids to brunch. And I remember thinking, maybe you need to cancel, because before, if I didn't get enough sleep, I felt like unsafe to kind of be in the world or have, you know, be with my kids, in case like, what if something went wrong? And I, it's like, I remember having this, just, it was so easy. It wasn't like, you have to do it. It was like, you could cancel, or what if you just went, and what if it was okay if you were tired? You know, this like knowing that I wouldn't suddenly like lose control and become insane if I just had a few hours of sleep. Like, and also, even if I had some scary thoughts, you know, my brain kind of being scared at brunch, like after only having a few hours of sleep, I felt like, well, I can take that and that can flow. But it's, I really remember that brunch and kind of being like, oh, I'm tired and that's okay. Like tired didn't equal panic and insane, like, you know, and I started to really, drop away, I think, that final fear about not getting enough sleep. And I also, my boyfriend, he's a commercial director, and some of his creative process, he'll just stay up all night, or he'll stay up until, you know, 5 or 6. And it was really interesting because I thought, well, he's not panicking. Isn't that interesting? I kind of chilled out, And I think in, you know, especially in the beginning we met, I was still taking some like natural supplements for sleep, and I'd still bring my sleep mask and my earplugs. And I did have a little bit of a fear of not getting enough sleep, and it didn't really impact my life. So I kind of that lingered on. But yeah, as I said, then with him, I just stopped taking the natural supplements. I got over it, and I proved to myself too that I, you know, sure, it feels nice to get 7 or 8 hours, but if I got whatever I got, like, oh, I was functioning. And also sometimes I feel great and happy, and it was so exciting to be in a new relationship. And it was more important for me to let go of that stress that I used to have of like, I have to get sleep, of like, how fun is it that we're connecting and we're talking, and he stays up later and I can stay up later. Doesn't mean that I can't say, oh, I'd like to go to bed now that we're together this long. But it was really, you know, kind of talking about sleep was the one of the last things. But it was very, because I think some of that was that controlling and that fear, you know.
I'm sure. And I think, you know, oftentimes sleep is a tricky one because we hear so much about like, oh, it's so important. If you don't sleep, this and this and that's going to happen, which, by the way, my community knows all about this, but I'm just kind of sharing it with you. There's absolutely no evidence whatsoever for all those claims. They're completely baseless, which is another story. But like, okay, so I want to ask you like maybe two more things before you wrap up here, or maybe three. Just briefly, what are the three principles?
Yeah. Well, the principles are happening whether we know about them or not. They were just founded in the 1970s by a man named Sid Banks, who just had kind of an enlightenment experience and put into more understandable words what's happening with our human experience. So one of them is consciousness. And that's kind of how we experience life. Like if we're unconscious, maybe for a dental procedure, we're not aware of life that's happening. So when we have consciousness, that's our thoughts getting brought to life and us, you know, having this kind of full experience of life. And in the conversation of consciousness, we also talk about state of mind, how it goes up and down. And when you're in that lower state of consciousness, maybe it might be 3 a.m. when someone's not sleeping and they're like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to go insane. And they remember all the studies. And sometimes our consciousness is just lower, or sometimes it, especially if we're used to sleeping, it can be lower in the middle of the night and we're just not as wise. And then you wake up in the morning sometimes and you realize like, oh, that wasn't such a big deal. And consciousness goes up and down. And so that's kind of one of the principles of when you can realize, one, that you're just having this full experience. You know, consciousness doesn't care what our thought is. It brings it to life. Whether it's just neutral. But, you know, if someone's up in the middle of the night and they are like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to sleep again. You know, so they haven't kind of into your, you know, your community yet, and they're new, or they, you know, and it's like, I'm going to lose my mind. Consciousness brings it to life. You know, we kind of feel like, oh, we have a full sensory experience of our thoughts, which is such a gift when we can see like how cool that is. You know, if someone's having thoughts that feel good and they, you know, whatever, they're picturing their dance recital or a vacation or even like this great food that they're going to cook, or maybe, you know, oh, whatever, we have that thought and it gets brought to life. But we just misuse it when it's those scary thoughts that get brought to life. But that's just how thought works, how consciousness works. The principle of thought is another principle, you know, that thoughts are neutral. Honestly, you know, if you're having trouble sleeping and you have the thought, I'll never sleep again, that's not true just because you have it. And that's not even a good or bad thought. That's just a thought. You know, our brain says, oh, maybe you will never sleep again. But when we don't take our thinking so seriously, it flows. So if someone's lying in bed at night and they think, oh, I'll never sleep again, they can realize, well, no, that's not true. That's just a nonsense thought. It can come and go all on its own. And a new thought might be, lying here is just as restorative. And also, I don't even have to lie here. Oh my God, I might get that book. I forgot I downloaded this new Kindle. Like, you know, and then you have a new thought and your experience flows. And then the third principle is called universal mind. And that's just this greater intelligence that is within us to help us fall asleep, where we can overthink that. And we can, our brain can think, I need to fall asleep, when it's actually not even our brain. It's this greater intelligence that, like, how cool that we fall asleep. But if we overthink it, we're like, how do I fall asleep? You know? And so universal mind, it's that wisdom, it's that common sense that is behind our brain. So I think with people like with a tendency towards anxiety, or when we overthink, we think our brain is so important and our thoughts are so important, and we don't realize this huge wisdom and common sense that grew us, that's responsible for the planet, that heals bones and keeps our body going when we're sleeping. So in this, the three principles conversation, we often start embracing this kind of quiet wisdom and common sense, and letting go of the more kind of personal ego thinking, because our wisdom and our common sense, it will guide us through everything. We don't have to think about it. You know, where if you're having a panic attack, you don't need to, like, what if and plan. Or if you're having a sleepless night, you don't need to be like, okay, what am I going to do if on vacation I can't sleep? Like, your wisdom and common sense will guide you through it. And so those are the principles in a nutshell to me. And they're happening all together too. You know, one can't happen without them, but just kind of helping you understand them. Because sometimes people say, oh, I need to get good at the principles. And there's nothing to get good at. It's just realizing what's going on. And it's just, you know, I think a big thing too is like, oh, we're all human. You know, we can all, our heads can get noisy, but that nobody feels good when we have a noisy head. But it's kind of that simple, because before, if I experienced anxiety or a sleepless night, what did I do wrong? Oh my, you know, just this going, is it my diet? Is it this? Blah, blah, blah. And now for me with the principles, it's like, oh, I started taking life too seriously. I had a noisy head. No big deal. Happens to all humans. There's less for me to do. It's enough just to remember that. And kind of, you know, when our head quiets down, we just naturally feel better. And if there's something to do, we see it.
Amazing. Well said. I mean, thank you for sharing it. And, I was just, you know, as you were speaking here, I remember actually something that our common client, she said, you know, she'd been on call with you, and you had said that, you know, we have this wisdom, for example, like, the body knows how to, you know, grow a child within, like, a woman's belly. And that was just struck me. It's like, yeah, like, that is super complex. And we have absolutely no clue how we do that. Yet it happens all the time. And it's kind of the same mystery with sleep. Like, you know, one time we can understand sleep as a perspective of, like, yeah, when the more sleepy we are, the more likely it is to that sleep happens. But how exactly that has happened? Like, what chemicals change this? What, like, who, we don't know. We have absolutely no clue, yet it just happens by itself. It just struck me when I heard that. It was such a nice, nice expression. And she also said, and this, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on, like, our common client, she also said something like, you know, Lily Sy says that thoughts are neutral. Then she says, but, like, when I have these thoughts, they don't feel neutral. Like, I become really, really scared. And then I was like, to me, what you said made perfect sense. So the way I explained it, and now I'm curious to hear your take, was kind of like, I totally see what Lily says. To me, like, any thought, like, a thought cannot be, like, it's not good or bad. It's like, it's just a thought. So from a moral perspective, if you will, of course they're neutral. They're not good or bad. But that doesn't mean, like, the feeling that they produce is necessarily neutral in a sense that it feels bland. Right? That's sort of how I explained it. And does that echo with how you think about it?
Yes. Yeah. Where I think when we can realize, yes, that exactly, they are morally neutral, but also they're neutral where for somebody, like my boyfriend, who I don't think he has ever had sleep anxiety. He kind of loves, like, working in the late time. So if he thought, oh, I'm going to get 1 hour of sleep, that's on the basis I might not sleep tonight, or I might get 1 hour. That might hold no charge for him, no anxious charge. Exactly. If somebody else might have the thought, I might not sleep tonight, you know, they might have a huge, strong feeling. Or even if somebody, I work with a lot of people that struggle with intrusive thoughts. And sometimes it's people that can have unwanted thoughts around children. So even the thought, that is such a cute kid, we could almost, most people would think that's neutral, or that's a good thought. If somebody was scared, like, what if they could become a pedophile? And they just had that thought, oh, that's a cute kid. They could freak out, you know, and think, I can't believe I thought that. It means I'm a pedophile, you know. but we're just having thoughts. And sometimes just because we have a thought doesn't mean it's ours, or it doesn't mean it's true, you know, where, but yes, we can have a strong reaction. And I don't think the goal is to, I just want to be like a blank slate with thought, because we can still have an opinion. We can still think, oh, I don't like that thought. But when we can see that it's just one thought just coming and going. And also to another big part, one of my teachers, Dickon Bettinger, said, like, anytime you don't feel good, pay no attention to what you're thinking, you know, because, and he has this, it's like a 3-minute video and I almost have it memorized, because he said, it's not that anybody that's become wise said, okay, wait, when you're at your very worst, write down everything that you're thinking. That's truth. You know, and we laugh because we know our thoughts are just kind of lower quality when we're not feeling good. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't break our heart if when we're sad and maybe we haven't been sleeping and we have a thought, you're a horrible mom. You know, you are ruining your experience, like as a new mom or something, and our heart might hurt, you know, but when we can see that that's also just a made up thought. I know I kind of got off track with the neutral, but it's okay that sometimes they don't feel neutral, but when we can have an understanding of thoughts and believe our thoughts when they wish us well, and when they don't, we can, you know, let them go, because that's such a great thing, is that we have new thoughts, you know? And that, I think, has been a life-changing for me, was that I'm never stuck. You know, I can be, if I was sitting here and I felt anxious, that's okay, because that's just an experience, and experiences flow. You know, I could be anxious or have some anxious thoughts and a feeling in the middle seat on an airplane, you know, and to know that experience can flow and there's nothing I have to do. It doesn't mean I can't do anything, yeah. You know, like I could be in a meeting, I could be at the dentist, I could be driving. And to see that we always return to balance, we always flow, I can more allow my experience to show up. And when we do, we have less resistance, whether it's, I wake up at 4 or something, like, and I have a hard time falling asleep. I honestly don't do anything. You know, it's funny. And sometimes I do have thoughts. You're maybe never going to get to sleep, but I have this deeper underlying belief. I'll be fine. Even if I'm up at 4 for the day. All right. There's no fear that now I'm going to go insane. It's like, I can handle it. And then honestly, usually I fall asleep again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Super, super well said again. And, you know, there's just so much, like, this is such a rich conversation. Like, it could go so many places. I have so many questions for you, but I want to keep it kind of like digestible within, like, you know, 40, 50 minutes. So I guess one last thing here is, like, for people who are connecting you with you and they'll be like, are thinking like, oh, Lily seems amazing, I want to work with her. You know, I saw on your website that you're not taking any new clients. Is it like, can people still work with you, or is it, are you waitlist, or what's going on?
Yes. Well, I have a lot of, I have a course that I have a very extensive course that is like over 40 hours of video. So it's there, and from anything from intrusive thoughts, health anxiety, driving anxiety, physical symptoms and panic attacks, moods and relationships. Oh my gosh, so much stuff, like sleep anxiety. There's stuff on there, morning anxiety, pregnancy anxiety, flight anxiety. Like, there's just where everything is. All my content is there. And then I have smaller courses too on intrusive thoughts. That one might just have 7 videos on health anxiety. And then I have just smaller ones where people can just buy like a driving anxiety workshop or physical symptoms and panic attacks. I talk a lot about derealization and depersonalization, because that was something that I didn't know it had a name, but that was so, so incredibly scary for me. So I have like a masterclass and then a workshop on that. So I have a lot of stuff that, regardless if I have a waitlist, people can get. And also, when people have already taken something of mine, I usually bump them up, because I'm like, oh, you already are familiar. But I move through my wait list. So it's never too long. I just had like two new clients yesterday, and a lot of people say, oh, I didn't know how long it was going to take. And sometimes it's just like 2 weeks, you know. That's just actually one way that I take care of my mental health, is sometimes to just have a wait list, because I'm also a mom and my kids do sports, and I just had to start all various times of the year. I just have to start a wait list, because, I know if I'm in a great place, that's the most important thing for me, to show up feeling good and being in a loving, lighthearted place. But there's still so many opportunities to work with me. And I also just on Instagram just did like a subscriber thing. It's like $4.99 a month. And if people subscribe, I went live twice this week, but I'm going to try to plan to go live every week. And then I have a kind of a large following. So if people are subscribers, then they send me a DM and they say, make a video on this, you know, in a nice way too. But like, so that's just something that's affordable. A lot of people said, oh my God, I love it, that it's just $4.99 a month. And then that's a way to, because I'm already on Instagram, people are already on Instagram. And then sometimes with Instagram, I stopped going live as much because there'd be weird trolls. But when I go live just to my subscribers, I know it's going to be a really wonderful opportunity. So that is another way that people can work with me at a very low price.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I'm sure a lot of people will connect with you. I mean, we have a small channel, but a lot of you here are like, we'll connect with you in addition to everybody's already following you. So yeah, I just want to say super nice connecting with you. I'll definitely want to talk to you again if you're open to it. And yeah, thanks. Just thanks for coming on today.
Oh, thank you. I know, I would love to talk with you. I was thinking maybe if we do something for like my listeners, it would be great. And you could talk all about sleep, because I've already been since I heard of you, and especially because I'm hesitant ever to recommend people if I don't, I'm like, I don't want it to overcomplicate it. And especially with sleep. So when, we had that mutual client, I checked you, I'm like, oh my gosh, Daniel, you know, cause it's for people that are drawn to me, they really benefit from something simple. That's why I've loved your work, and I was really excited to recommend you. So thank you for having me on.
No, thanks so much. We'll go from there, but yeah, thanks everyone. And thanks Lila again. Bye for now.